Chapter 8.
Hey, Tenel Ka, you know why wampas have such long arms? Because their hands are so far from their face.
Jason Solo, age 14. Even with a comm feed into Nickel One's surveillance system and help from the Verpine Resistance Network, the trip down from the surface had been one nerve-wracking dash after another. Jaina and the Mandalorians were literally steaming sweat into the closed confines of their makeshift observation post inside the data assimilation chamber, and the air inside had grown as muggy as it was sour. The Verpine technicians kept coming over to ask the humans to stop perspiring so heavily, explaining that the extra humidity would soon begin to wreak havoc with the delicate circuitry of the Verpitron cyberbrains that were streaming updates to the giant holodisplays out in the strategic planning forum. When that happened, Jaina knew Myrta would strike whether or not they knew Kytus's location. Nearly the entire Moff Council was gathered in the strategic planning forum, discussing the imminent arrival of the fleets of Admirals Dalla and Neothel, and no Mandalorian would let pass an opportunity to eliminate so many targets at once. Jaina finished scrolling through the feeds on her borrowed vid receiver, then shook her head in disgust. There had been no sign of her brother in any of the monitored chambers, no hint that he had even passed down one of the asteroid's spotless tunnels. Nickel One's security system had simply lost track of him. Jaina glanced over and found an image of the strategic planning forum on the display of Myrta's vid receiver. Most of the small screen was filled with an image of the holodisplays the Moffs were studying, so that the room looked like a tiny yellow dot, representing the system's sun, surrounded by an inner ring of floating stones, the Roach asteroid field, depicted far larger than true scale. In front of the hologram, 20 speck-sized humans sat clustered together near the bottom of a dozen rows of theater-style seating.
"Hear anything useful?"
Jaina asked.
"Plenty," Myrta said, removing the sound plug from her ear. "Just nothing that's going to help us find your brother."
She disconnected the vid receiver's audio jack, and human voices began to spill from the speaker, surprisingly clear and resonant.
"Should have listened to Kytus after all," a deep, refined voice was saying. "It certainly seems he was correct about this conquest. We're lucky that suicide run on the Dominion only killed two of us."
"Very lucky," added a raspy-voiced jokester, "considering the two Moffs we lost."
The interruption drew a round of hearty laughter. Then refined voice continued.
"Yes, I suppose every catastrophe has its positive side. But now we've lost the Harbinger as well, and with the Hapens, Dalla, and Neothel all converging on us, that certainly won't be the last Star Destroyer we lose."
"Kytus's intelligence was better than ours this time," replied a Durasteel-voiced man. "I'll give you that. But that hardly means we should present him with the dozens of Star Destroyers we have in the Roach system. Even if we were inclined to turn the Empire over to the bad seed of a common spice runner and his gutter-crawling princess, which I sincerely hope we're not—"
A chorus of amused snorts confirmed that the Moffs were not.
"Kytus has hardly proven himself worthy of our confidence. That mess at Fondor was very nearly the Alliance's undoing."
"Hear, hear," boomed a thick-tongued Moff. "Kytus is no Palpatine, I can tell you that."
"Yes, yes, Jawar," said refined voice. "We're all aware that you served on the Emperor's personal staff as a young officer."
"And he's not likely to let us forget it," added raspy jokester.
This drew a few polite chuckles. Then refined voice continued.
"But I hope everyone here realizes that if Kytus hadn't brought the Fourth Fleet along, we'd actually be outnumbered right now."
"True,"
agreed Durasteel voice. "And doesn't that betray a certain naivete? A wiser man would not have brought in the Fourth until we were already outnumbered. He might well have been in a position to dictate terms to us rather than the reverse."
Myrta thumbed the volume down, then said,
"That's the gist of what they've been talking about. Most of them seem to like the idea of joining with the Galactic Alliance to form a new empire, but only if it's under their control."
"Not that it matters what they decide," added Vatok, looming over Jaina and Myrta in his black Beskar gam. "Seeing as how they're all going to be dead in 5 minutes."
5 minutes?
Jaina looked from Vatok back to Myrta, then understood. Myrta had already given the go order over her helmet comm.
"You gave the order?"
Myrta tipped her helmet in acknowledgement.
"How long do you expect us to wait?"
She glanced back at the big cyberbrains, where two Verpine technicians were monitoring systems displays and casting fretful looks back toward Jaina and her sweaty Mandalorian companions.
"If those Verpatrons go, so does our element of surprise."
"If we attack without knowing where Kytus is," Jaina countered, "we may be the ones who get surprised. There's a reason we can't find him on the security system, and it's not because he's using the refresher."
"You're saying he might know we're here?" Myrta asked.
"I'm saying he definitely knows you're here," Jaina said. "He can feel your presences in the Force. And if he hasn't told the Moffs, there's a reason."
Myrta and the other Mandalorians were silent for a moment. Then Vatok asked,
"He's setting up the Moffs for us?"
Jaina shook her head.
"Whatever he's doing, it's not for you," she said. "Maybe he's thinking that with the Moffs gone, he can seize their fleets. Or maybe he's using them to draw you out. That's what I'd bet on."
"Or maybe the Jedi just wants to take out her brother first," said Roger, the blue-armored man whose own brother had perished in the first Trakad. "Nice try, Aruati, but we're not buying."
Jaina looked to Myrta.
"You know me," she said. "I'm not making this up."
"Wouldn't matter if you were," Myrta replied. "We're here to kill the Moffs, and we're not going to get a better shot at them."
"That wasn't our deal."
"Sure it was," Myrta said. "You're in charge. As long as we attack now."
Jaina sighed and looked at the floor. If she was right about her brother's intentions, she could use the Mandalorian attack to her advantage. She knew that. But she wouldn't be able to kill a Sith Lord and save Myrta's life. She knew that, too. Vatok nudged her elbow with his.
"What's wrong, JT?"
he asked.
"Afraid of your brother?"
"Actually, yes."
Jaina took the quiet snipe off her back, then looked toward a small hatch in the center of the room's curved wall.
"I'll be in the projection booth, but don't expect covering fire until Kytus goes down."
"Just like a Jedi. Any excuse to stay out of the fighting," Roger said.
A grunt of disgust sounded inside his blue helmet, and he started toward the exit on the far side of the cyberbrains.
"Let's do this. I'm getting hot."
Myrta's saffron helmet turned after him, and Jaina could sense that her friend was about to say something sharp. She caught the Mandalorian by her arm.
"His opinion means nothing to me," Jaina said. "Stay focused."
Myrta continued to look after Roger for a moment, then nodded.
"You're right," she said. "Sorry we couldn't do this your way."
"Me too," Jaina said. "May the Force be with you out there."
Myrta snorted through her golden faceplate.
"Yeah, that's going to help a Mandalorian."
She slapped Jaina on the side of the shoulder.
"Shoot straight and run fast. We'll see you when it's done."
She said something into her helmet and started after Roger. Four of her commandos started after her, but Vatok remained behind. He pulled off his helmet and looked down at her. his blonde beard and hair plastered flat by sweat.
"You really think he's waiting for us?"
he asked.
"I can't sense it," Jaina said. "But yes, that's what I think."
"And it scares you?"
Jaina nodded.
"It does."
A twinkle came to Vatok's eye, and he flashed her a smile every bit as mischievous as any she had ever seen from her father.
"That's what I was hoping."
Jaina cocked her brow.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah," he said. "Did you think I kept coming back to Bevine's barn because I like bruises?"
"Frankly," Jaina said, "I did."
Vatok looked surprised for an instant. Then his smile returned.
"And you liked giving them?"
He shook his head, then put his helmet back on and turned to leave.
"What did I expect from a JT?"
Jaina laughed.
"I liked fighting you too, Vatok," she said. "You were my favorite."
Vatok turned back.
"You mean that?"
"Sure," Jaina said.
She hadn't realized he was growing so fond of her. It seemed a lifetime ago, since before Mara's death, that she had paid any attention to that sort of thing.
"Even better than fat."
"You better not be making fun of me."
Vatok's tone was only about half-joking.
"I'm the sensitive type, you know."
"A sensitive Mandalorian? No such thing," Jaina retorted. "But I'm telling the truth. Fett's an old man. It's like bruising your father."
Vatok laughed and started toward the door.
"I'm going to tell him you said that, you know."
"I hope you do,"
Jaina said. Silently, she added, "Because it means you came back alive."
"Shoot straight and run fast."
This stopped the big Mandalorian in his tracks. His helmet turned back toward her, and she could sense that his mood had swung toward the serious.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"Don't tell me that's something Mandalorians only say to women."
"Only to assassins,"
Vatok corrected.
"To commandos, you say, die proud."
"Sorry. JT say ignorance," Jaina said. "But please, don't."
Vatok chuckled.
"Okay, since you asked so nicely."
He started toward the door again.
"May the Force be with you, Jedi."
This time, Vatok didn't look back, leaving Jaina alone with her fears, wondering not only whether he and Myrta and the rest of the Mandalorians were headed to their deaths, but whether she might be as well. Even Luke did not know the full extent of Kytus's powers, and Jaina had no illusions about being her brother's equal in terms of Force strength. If it came down to a straight Force battle, she would die. It was that simple. But her fears ran deeper than just dying. She knew her parents too well to think her death would destroy them or ravage their marriage. But it would crush them, and she could not bear to imagine the craziness they might undertake in a grief-fueled quest for vengeance. And the risks of actually succeeding were even greater. Jaina's best chance of success lay in ambush, but she did not imagine for a moment that she could kill her own brother in cold blood and remain untainted by the dark side. All that assumed, of course, that when Jaina looked into her brother's yellow eyes, she could pull the trigger, that she did not lose her resolve. She extended the barrel of her quiet snipe and slipped a magazine of pellets into the feeder, then summoned one of the cyberbrain technicians over to the projection booth. The Verpine Resistance Network, consisting of roughly the entire insectoid population of the Roach system, had already explained to Jaina and the Mandalorians that this booth housed only part of the projection equipment. Similar booths were located on the two flanking walls, and there was one in the floor below the hologram. Inside each booth were two Imperials, a member of the Stormtrooper Elite Guard and a holoprojectionist.
"Call the guard out for me,"
Jaina whispered. The Verpine lowered his long snout.
"Why?"
"So I can take him down quietly,"
Jaina said.
"We don't want to alarm the Moffs, do we?"
"I mean, why should the Resistance help you?"
the insectoid asked.
"The Verpine do not have a mutual aid treaty with the Jedi."
Jaina grated her teeth, recalling how exacting insectoid minds tended to be, and wondering if she had been this annoying as a Killick joiner.
"The Jedi don't require treaties," she explained. "We help where help is needed. But if the Verpine don't need help..."
She began to break down the quiet snipe.
"Wait."
The Verpine punched a code into the security pad on the triangular hatch, then called inside.
"Trooper H-449-B7, there may be a security breach you should check."
"Again?" came the electronic voiced reply.
Potential security breaches were the standard excuses that the Verpine technician and labor castes had been using, under the pretense of full cooperation, to lure stormtroopers aside as Jaina and the Mandalorians penetrated the depths of the asteroid.
"What is it this time?" the trooper asked, coming toward the door. "Strange pheromones? An open hatch? Someone's pet Minok on the loose?"
The technician waited until the stormtrooper was coming through the hatchway before answering.
"I'm not sure." He looked toward Jaina. "It might be a Jedi."
"A what?"
The trooper turned to look, leaving Jaina with no choice but to push the barrel of her quiet snipe up under his jawline and pull the trigger. There was a barely audible krafoot as the mag pellet accelerated up the barrel and into his brain. A red spray shot from beneath the stormtrooper's helmet, and he stumbled back toward the nearest Verpitron, dying even before his feet had stopped moving. The technician cried out and leapt after the trooper, pulling him away from the delicate cyberbrain into the floor in a loud plastoid clatter. Jaina frowned down at the Verpine.
"That wasn't much of a diversion."
The technician blinked up at her.
"You wanted him to look the other way?"
he asked.
"Why didn't you say so?"
Before Jaina could reply, a female voice called from inside the booth.
"H, what's going on out there?"
Jaina stepped through the hatchway into a large durasteel booth packed with softly humming holoprojection equipment. At the front of the cramped little chamber, a projectionist in a brown Imperial uniform was standing in front of a chest-high control board, peering through a panel of one-way transparisteel. Her small hands were splayed wide over an array of knobs and glide switches designed for long-fingered Verpine technicians, flying back and forth as she struggled to maintain the crispness of the holo images out in the strategic planning forum. When her stormtrooper companion did not answer, she turned away from the transparisteel panel, at the same time calling,
"H?"
Jaina was already leaping. Unfortunately, she could not use the Force for fear of alerting her brother to her presence, so it took a couple of bounds to reach the front of the booth. The projectionist's eyes grew wide, and her hand darted toward the blaster pistol hanging from her belt, which was what saved her life. Jaina reached the woman just as the blaster pistol cleared its holster and quickly pushed it down. A single bolt pinged off the floor and began to bounce around inside the projection equipment, triggering a succession of hisses, clinks, and pops that left no doubt about the damage being done. Jaina cursed under her breath, then slammed a side hammer fist into her attacker's jaw hinge, catching a nerve bundle just under the ear. The projectionist fell instantly unconscious and dropped to the floor in a heap. Jaina used plastic cuffs to bind her at the wrists and ankles, then smashed the emitter nozzle of the woman's blaster pistol against the floor and tossed it aside. By the time she had finished, acrid smoke filled the air, and the sounds coming from the holoprojectors had grown even more loud and exotic. Long descending whistles, low raspings, sharp bangs. Jane peered through the one-way panel and saw many of the images in the hologram starting to break up. Down in the forum's front seats, a cluster of 20 men dressed in metal-heavy Imperial uniforms were scowling up at the display. They did not appear to have any aides with them, but a detail of stormtroopers in the gray armor of the Remnant's elite guard were stationed a dozen meters away, on the small apron area between the forum's uppermost seats and the exit doors. There was, of course, no sign of Darth Kitus. The projectionist's comlink began to chirp for attention. Jaina checked the name tag on the woman's uniform, then pulled the comlink from her breast pocket and opened the channel.
"Sangi here,"
she said, deliberately putting a little shrillness into her response in an attempt to divert attention from any obvious differences in their voices.
"Just having a little problem."
"What kind of problem?"
demanded a tinny male voice.
"And give me a proper report, Ensign. We have good reasons for these protocols, you know."
"Of course, Lieutenant,"
Jaina replied, taking an educated guess.
"It's nothing serious. Just blew a couple of..."
"Lieutenant,"
the man interrupted.
"Sorry, Lieutenant Commander,"
Jaina said, taking another guess.
"We just blew a couple of capacitors. Everything should be back online in a minute."
"Very well,"
the voice said, and Jaina knew she had guessed wrong. Had she been right, there would have been another lecture about completeness, perhaps even a request for an authentication code.
"Carry on."
"You bet."
Jaina dropped the comlink on the floor and crushed it beneath her boot heel. Sangi's commander already knew where she was, but at least this way, the communications team would not be able to activate the comlink remotely and eavesdrop on what she was doing. She closed the hatch at the back of the booth, locking it from the inside, so any Remnant security personnel coming after her would have to cut their way into the booth, then heard a muffled chain of thuds as the Mandalorians began their assault on the Moffs. Jaina extended the barrel of her quiet snipe and went to the projection aperture in the center of the booth's front wall. Unlike the transparisteel panel through which the projectionist had been watching the holograms, the aperture was just an empty hole through which the holoprojector beam could pass without suffering any image degradation, or through which a mag pellet could pass without being deflected. By the time Jaina had reached the projection aperture, most of the elite guard lay more or less helpless on the floor. Many were obviously dead, their bodies torn apart by the detonite explosions with which the Mandalorians had opened their initial assault. Others were too wounded or too blast-shocked to fight, some holding their arms over gaping holes in their stomach armor, others banging charred limb stumps on the floor. A few were sitting upright, with their arms hanging at their sides or resting in their laps, their faceplates fixed on the ruptured doors at the back of the room, as though they could not see or hear, or weren't even aware of the 7 maniacs in brightly colored Beskar gam charging out of the smoke. At least 2 dozen guards had escaped the carnage of the initial assault, and now they were retreating toward the front seats. As soon as they saw the Mandalorians, they began to fire up toward the apron with their repeating blasters, slowing the onslaught but hardly stopping it. Their hits merely knocked the Mandalorians off their feet without penetrating their Beskar gam, and a second later, the Mondos would be up and coming again. Unfortunately, time was something the attackers did not have. Even Beskar gam was no match for sheer numbers, and it would be only a minute, perhaps a matter of seconds, before stormtroopers began to pour through the doors behind them. Jaina was in a perfect position to tip the balance by opening fire and clearing a lane down to where the Moffs had taken cover in the Forum's lower seats. The trouble was, helping the Mandalorians meant revealing her presence to Kytus, and that meant reducing her own chances of success to almost nothing. She knew what Fett would do in her place. And in this case, he was right. The Mandalorians had their mission, and Jaina had hers. The only thing that caused Jaina doubt was the lack of her brother's actual presence. She could think of 100 reasons he might be hiding from Nickel One's security cams, but the only ones that made sense right now had to do with the Mandalorians. Either he intended to ambush them, or Vatak had been right about him setting up the Moffs for assassination. Jaina watched with strained patience as a string of bolts finally slipped beneath the bottom edge of a Mandalorian helmet and sent it tumbling away, the head inside trailing curls of smoke and blood. The fellow's companions were too disciplined to look or even acknowledge the reminder of their own mortality, but the assault did stall for just an instant. No strangers to battle themselves, the troopers of the elite guard sensed the minuscule shift in momentum and immediately changed tactics, concentrating their fire on the most exposed Mondos. A torrent of fiery beams drove a brown-armored Mandalorian to the stairs, where he lay thrashing and cooking inside his armor until a lucky bolt finally found a seam and put him out of his misery. With only 5 enemies remaining, the elite guard started to advance back toward the upper rows of seats, literally pushing their foes ahead of them with blaster bolts. Another Mandalorian went down, a melt hole opening in his breastplate when he made the mistake of presenting the same side of his armor to the Imperials for too long. The Mandalorians finally gave up their charge and dived for cover between the seats. Eager to press their advantage, the elite guard began to race upward, stepping from seat top to seat top and blowing apart whole rows in their attempts to get at their enemies. Jaina saw Myrta glance up toward her hiding place and began to wonder if there was any sense in remaining concealed. At this rate, the Mandalorians were going to be killed without any help from her brother. Down in the lower seats, the Moffs had apparently reached a similar conclusion. They began to show their heads, shouting encouragement and orders, usually conflicting, to their bodyguards. And that was what Myrta had been waiting for. 4 grenades flew up from behind the seats. Explosives weren't necessarily the most accurate or certain way to kill someone, but they were alarming. About half the elite guard turned to dive for cover before it grew apparent that the grenades were arcing over their heads down toward the Moffs. Some actually turned to watch, while others let their fires stray as they instinctively ducked or dodged. Several meters from where the grenades had originated, Myrta and Roger came over the seats, firing and leaping across rows. 3 Imperials went down with scorch holes in their armor before they could react, and 2 more fell to the floor, still spinning when they turned to fire, and were rewarded with bolts through the faceplates. Then, when the remaining guards turned toward the 2 bounding commandos, Vatak and the last Mandalorian popped up from where the grenades had originated. They began to lay covering fire, catching 6 Imperials square in the back, bringing the odds close enough to even that Myrta and Roger were almost assured of reaching the Moffs in one piece. But Jaina was far more interested in the grenades. Instead of detonating in the midst of the Moffs, they seemed to catch a non-existent wind and drift through the deteriorating hologram toward her projection booth. She could think of only one explanation for such an odd flight. Kytus. He was coming to the Moffs' defense. Did that mean he was using the Moffs to draw the Mandalorians out, or the Mandalorians to draw her out? The battle sounds out in the Forum seemed to fade as Jaina's pulse began to pound in her ears. The grenades were coming in her direction, under her brother's control.
Convinced she knew what that meant, terrified she knew, she lowered her quiet snipe and reached out to the grenades in the force. Then felt them drop away. They detonated outside the booth, somewhere a few meters below. The floor shook beneath her feet, and a blinding curtain of light and flame shot up in front of the image aperture. The sound of Jaina's pulse pounding in her ears changed to sharp banging, and the acrid smell of detonite and smoke scorched her nostrils. Then a lightsaber snap hissed to life out in the forum and began to whine and whir through a deflection pattern. Still, Jaina did not quite grasp that she had been mistaken, that the approaching grenades had not been a sign of her brother's omniscience, merely a coincidence of timing and location, until she began to hear the chee-choo of blaster bolts being deflected by Kytus's blade. Jaina quickly shut herself off from the force and returned to the aperture, the quiet snipe raised to her shoulder and her finger on the trigger. Her brother was just dancing out of the yellow ball of the holographic sun, a dark-cloaked figure with no helmet and yellow eyes, weaving baskets of crimson light as he spun through the holographic asteroids, batting bolts of blaster energy back toward alarmed Mandalorians and confused bodyguards alike. Jaina braced the barrel of the quiet snipe on the edge of the image aperture. But Kytus, she could not bear to think of him as her brother, not at that moment, was moving too wildly and quickly to give her a clean shot. She would have to wait until he engaged someone and slowed down. Myrta Gev was the first of the original combatants to recover from the shock of his arrival. A bouncing figure in yellow-orange armor, only a few rows from her targets, she turned her G-10 power blaster on a round-faced Moff with a ruddy complexion and three chins, and a smoke hole the size of Jaina's fist erupted from the man's back. Kytus came out of a spin, looking in Myrta's direction. She sailed meters into the air, flipping upside down and crashing into a ceiling corner on the far side of the chamber, then dropping 4 meters to the floor. She landed on the crown of her helmet in a metallic crash, audible even above the battle, and folded in two, and she did not move again. Jaina forced herself not to feel the sentiments rising inside her, the rage and shock and sorrow. Emotion is a weakness. It would not save the living, she reminded herself, and it could not bring the dead back to life. She returned her attention to Kytus and saw the Moffs cowering in the seats behind him, returning the Mandalorian's fire with underpowered holdout blasters and T-21s taken from their fallen bodyguards. Kytus himself was driving a boot into Roger's blue breastplate, sending him tumbling backward over a row of seats. Jaina set the quiet snipe sight on the back of the Sith's head and squeezed the trigger. Then saw a gray helmet spurt blood when a bodyguard stepped between her and her target. He fell toward Kytus, smashing him in the small of his back and nearly knocking him over the seats after Roger. Kytus righted himself with the force and came around with his lightsaber sweeping low, his yellow eyes blazing with anger as he sliced through the bodyguard's helmet. Jaina adjusted her aim, then barely prevented herself from squeezing the trigger when a streak of blue armor came leaping over the seats to block her shot, the curved blade of a Beskad flashing at Kytus's neck. Roger never had a chance. Kytus simply spun inside the attack, staggering his assailant with a force-driven elbow to the helmet. Knowing the folly of trying to track a whirling target, especially without the force to aid her, Jaina kept her eye on her sniper sight and waited for him to move into the shot. But Kytus slipped in the opposite direction, dragging his blade across the Mandalorian's faceplate, then pulling it back across the breastplate. The slashes would have cut through normal armor like a plasma torch through plastoid, but all they did to Roger's blue Beskar gam was burn a couple of deep furrows. Still,
Good armor was hardly a match for the speed and power of a Sith Lord. By the time Roger recovered from the elbow strike and tried to bring his Beskar up again, Kytus was already trapping the Mandalorian sword arm in an elbow lock. Continuing to spin and denying Jaina a viable target, he deactivated his lightsaber and cocked his arm back for a pommel strike. Then Kytus did a peculiar thing. He paused for an instant, glowering at the Mandalorian's blue armor as though offended by its color. Jaina saw the chance for a difficult oblique shot past Roger's helmet and swung the quiet snipe over. Kytus brought the pommel of his lightsaber down, striking the breastplate not all that hard, not quite in the center, and shattering it. The Beskar didn't burst apart or send shards flying or do anything remotely explosive. It just crumbled away from the vac-proof underliner, leaving Roger faceplate to chin with his soon-to-be killer. Jaina was too disciplined to let her shock distract her, but she was shocked. Beskar Gam was some of the toughest armor in the galaxy, able to deflect blaster bolts and lightsaber strikes with little more than a scorch mark. And her brother had just destroyed a piece with a tap. Had he mastered the shatter point? The Academy archives claimed that it was a lost and rare art, the ability to perceive points of weakness where a small amount of precisely applied force would unlock the unseen structures that bound together even the most indestructible materials and situations. The great Jedi Master Mace Windu, who had died in the Clone Wars, had been known to possess the gift. He had been the last. Until Kytus. Growing more frightened than ever by the magnitude of her brother's powers, and therefore even more resolved to stop him, Jaina set her front sight on Kytus's ear and fired a burst of 3 pellets. Just as Kytus flipped his lightsaber around and thumbed the activation switch, the blade ignited inside Roger's chest, splitting him open at the sternum. The tip extended up through his neck and hit the back of his helmet, failing to penetrate the tough Beskar and snapping his head back into the path of Jaina's first mag pellet. The third pellet whispered past, barely a centimeter behind Kytus's unprotected head, and punched a hole through a seat. But the second pellet, the one that didn't miss, caught Kytus in the shoulder and sent him spinning. With Roger's sword arm still trapped in an elbow lock, he pulled the Mandalorian around with him, and Jaina's next burst of mag pellets slammed into the blue plate still affixed to the dead man's back. The impact tipped the balance, driving Kytus over a row of seats and out of sight down on the floor. Jaina continued to fire, her mag pellets tearing seats apart as she swept the barrel back and forth. Either the Moffs and their bodyguards did not know where the attack on Kytus was coming from, or they did not care, which was hardly a surprise. Half a dozen Moffs lay strewn over seats with gaping scorch holes where their medals or eyes or ears used to be, and the 4 bodyguards left to protect the survivors were clearly not up to the job. Vatok and the other surviving Mandalorian were working their way down toward the lower seats, taking turns moving and covering, and reducing the number of Moffs and bodyguards by 1 each as Jaina watched. The quiet snipe finally ran out of mag pellets. Jaina ducked out of the image aperture and rolled to one side, ejecting the empty magazine and wondering whether she could possibly have taken Kytus out so easily. She had her answer an instant later when a fork of force lightning danced through the aperture and shattered the lens of the holoprojector. Jaina slipped a fresh magazine into her quiet snipe and continued to roll until she reached the control board where the projectionist had been standing. The force lightning ceased, but Jaina did not make the mistake of returning to the aperture through which she had fired the first time. Instead, she poked her head up above the control board and looked through the viewing panel out into the forum seats. Kytus was on his feet again, dancing back and forth, his wounded arm hanging limp at his side, wielding his lightsaber one-handed and still deflecting everything that Vatak and the other Mandalorian were pouring down toward the Moffs. Jaina started to step back to her original firing position, then noticed a trio of blaster barrels scattered across the lower seats, pointing up toward the aperture. Clearly, someone had taken control of the situation down there, and she had the sinking feeling that it was her brother. She pulled her lightsaber off her belt and jammed the emitter nozzle against the one-way viewing panel above the control board. Out in the forum, she saw Kytus look toward the second Mandalorian. The man suddenly stopped firing and grabbed for his throat, scratching at the bottom rim of his helmet as though he believed that was what had crushed his larynx. Jaina thumbed her lightsaber's activation switch, and the blade snapped to life, burning a thumb-sized hole through the one-way transparisteel in front of her. The three blaster barrels she had spotted a moment earlier swung toward the blade's glow and began to pour sizzling bolts of energy into the viewing panel. Jaina ignored the attacks and worked her blade in a circle, enlarging the hole into a suitable firing port. By the time she had finished, Vatak was the last Mandalorian remaining, only a few paces from Kytus and the Moffs, and his attacks were being deflected without going anywhere near their targets. Jaina wanted to yell at him to stop, to turn and run, but even had there been time to pull her comlink and open a channel, she knew her words would have been futile. Vatak would never flee while his companions lay dead on the field of battle, nor would Kytus allow him that option. Jaina was looking at a dead man. She knew that. Knew that even if she killed her brother, she would not save her friend. She pushed the barrel of her quiet snipe through the hole she had made and pulled the trigger. But this time, Kytus was not surprised. He spun away even as she opened fire, leaping in close to engage Vatak hand to hand, deftly placing the big Mandalorian between Jaina and himself. Jaina did what Fett would have done, what Vatak himself would have done, and continued to fire, doing her best to direct her pellets past his shoulders into Kytus, and failing. Even without the bodyguard's blaster bolts streaming up to blind her as they ricocheted off the exterior of her viewing panel, half her pellets were driving dents into Vatak's backplate, and the rest were sailing harmlessly past to destroy seats. Though Vatak still had two good arms, and Kytus had only one, it was all he could do to defend himself. And Jaina suspected that was only because her brother needed to keep using Vatak as a shield. The Mandalorian tried to slam the butt of his blaster into Kytus's head, only to have the lightsaber slice it in half. He drove a knee into the ribs on Kytus's vulnerable side, only to meet a force block that sent him stumbling back into a burst of mag pellets from Jaina. He caught a lightsaber strike on his Beskar Vambrace, then tried to drop an iron-gloved fist across the bridge of Kytus's nose, only to find himself striking at empty air when his foe was already ducking away and driving him back with a shoulder to the midsection. Nor could Jaina do anything to help. Her brother seemed to anticipate every adjustment she made, swinging Vatak around to block her line of sight when she tried to slide a burst of pellets past the Mandalorian's flank, dancing aside when she streamed fire straight into his back in an effort to push him forward and bowl Kytus over. Then, 3 seconds and 100 pellets later, Jaina ran out of ammunition again. Before she had even pulled the barrel out of her makeshift firing port, Kytus had force-hurled Vatak down between the seats and was driving his lightsaber down toward the Mandalorian's head. Even without the scream, Jaina would have known her friend was dead.